Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I mean, that throw to Terry McLaurin that gave them a 28-0 lead, that's the kind of throw where you're like, yeah, they got it right. Arm angle like Stafford, like Mahomes, like Allen, pressure off the edge, unblocked, calmly, arm angles it sideways. Perfect throw to Terry McLaurin. Great catch, too. The route was already in process at that one, at that point, but that made it 28-0 early in the second quarter. Washington got right a week later than it wanted to. But they annihilated Tennessee 42-19 to snap a three-game losing skid and enter their late bye week feeling good about things again. Good morning. Denton is here with me. 8-5 after a near flawless performance yesterday. There was one flaw that we will talk about when we get to the game take. One thing to be concerned about when we get to the game take, but it started fast with quick passes and explosive runs on offense, swarming pressure on defense, turnover forcing plays on both defense and special teams. The Titans were terrible yesterday, but Washington had a lot to do with it. Tennessee came into the game, as we talked about all week, with one of the better defenses in the league. They were the number one team in the NFL in third down defense. Washington converted 9 of 14 on third down, 64.3%. Of course, it helps when 12 of your third downs are third and three or shorter. I've got a breakdown of the third down distances coming up in my game recap. I'm not sure I can ever remember that many third and shorts in a game. But converting on third down and staying on the field for the first time in a few weeks makes a huge difference. Washington, 9 of 14. They had 29 first downs in the game to just 12 for the Titans. That equated to Washington having 83 snaps on offense, counting the plays that ended in penalty. Tennessee just 55 offensive snaps. 28 more offensive snaps in a game helps. The offense, unstoppable again. And that felt as good as the win itself did, because it is the offense that has to be at that level for the team to make the postseason for starters and then have a chance to be more than just happy to be there when they actually arrive. The offensive line was excellent. All three running backs were really good. Terry McLaurin, A+, and Jaden Daniels. Whatever Terry was, he was probably a bit more than that. The quarterback once again made it clear that he is capable of great. He has started in this season now 13 games in his rookie year, more than half of them, solidly more than half of them, have been beyond what you would expect from a rookie quarterback. Yesterday was one of those. The ball came out quickly and accurately early, something that we had not seen enough of in recent weeks. At least 6 or 7 of the first 10 or 11 throws were quick game throws. It started with a quick one to Terry on the first play from scrimmage, then a three-step drop hits Noah Brown on the second play from scrimmage. Credit Cliff Kingsbury for getting his quarterback into rhythm, and by the way, getting his best receiver the ball early, no matter where he lined up. Meantime, every run imaginable worked, but none of them worked as much as when the quarterback himself is a possible run threat on a play. Just look at some of the gaping holes created by, yes, the offensive line yesterday, outstanding, but also the defense in conflict, needing to consider the quarterback as a potential runner. He kept it a few times on zone reads, but it was what the others did when he didn't keep it that was fun to watch. Robinson Jr., McNichols, and then Chris Rodriguez combined for 229 yards on the ground. 6.5 yards per carry for the three running backs. You throw in Jaden's 34 yards and De'Ami Brown's 4-yarder. The Skins rushed for 267 yards in the game. You're not going to lose games when you rush for 267 in a game. By the way, on 45 attempts. Dominant offensive performance for Washington. They punted once. That's the way it used to be. The win was must have. It really was. It felt like that all week leading into this bye week. It felt even better. It did for me anyway, because it was an offensive performance like the ones we used to know, like the ones we got used to over the first 9 games on the way to 7-2. At least for the next 2 weeks, we don't have to talk about, you know, Cliff's offense getting figured out, which of course was completely debunked and has been for a while now, or the quarterback hitting the rookie wall, or any of the other things discussed after losing, you know, games to 2 really good teams in Philly and Pittsburgh, and then, of course, laying that egg last week against the Cowboys. 8-5, and the team's meal ticket, its offense, looked awesome against a really good Tennessee defense. Good vibes, just in time. They really needed it yesterday. Adversity had struck for the first time for this regime and this organization anyway, and they really answered the bell. They needed the win, and they needed an overall performance that was confidence-lifting. The bye week is here once again for the 3rd straight year, very late in the season. I'm not sure how that works. But they head into it in good shape from a playoff perspective. Currently holding down the 7 seed in the NFC. That's the last seed. Remember, you know, a few years back, 7 teams each conference, 4 division winners, 3 wild cards, seeded 1-7, one gets the bye, the other 6 play on wild card weekend. They are a game better in the loss column right now than 3-6-6 teams that are behind them in that chase for that 7th wild card spot. Those teams, by the way, are all chasing division titles as well. But Washington, I think, needs 2 out of their last 4 to get to 10-7 to be totally safe. I think 10-7 is a lock to get in. 9-8, a bit dicey. You know, they have New Orleans on the road when they come back after the bye week on December 15th. They've got Philadelphia at home on the 22nd. Then the Falcons after that at home. I think we'll find out this week when that game will actually be played. The NFL will likely have information on that particular NFL weekend. There were five games designated as potential moves to Saturday, December 28th. And three of them will get picked for a triple header on that day. Washington, Atlanta could certainly get moved to the day before. And then the season finale comes in Dallas on January 5th. Win two of those to get to 10, they're in. Win one, there's a chance, but it'll come down to tiebreakers more likely than not. Now, a couple of things just to keep in mind. Yes, Washington is still alive in the NFC East race with Philadelphia. Barely, though. The Eagles have a three-game lead in the loss column. They just won their eighth in a row. They beat the Ravens up on the road yesterday. They would have to lose three more games, including the one here in Washington, while the Skins would have to run the table, pretty much. It's a long shot to win the division. But here's the other thing to keep in mind, and it's much more, I think, applicable to our situation as the, you know, one of the teams chasing right now a wild card berth. And right now, the way it looks, the 7 seed. I know this is premature, but after yesterday and with a bye week, I'm going to get to it anyway, because as the playoff scenario guy, I want to let you know that the 7 seed likely means that on wild card weekend, you go to Philadelphia or the NFC North winner, which right now appears to be the Lions, although Minnesota keeps winning, Green Bay keeps winning. I mean, right now the Lions are 11-1, the Vikings are 10-2, the Packers are 9-3. But here's the opportunity for Washington the rest of the way. And this is why 2 out of 4 just to get to 10. Okay, well, let's take them one at a time. Well, that's what they have to do. They could still make a decent run for the 6 seed, which now you put yourself in a position where you play a first-round wild card game in Seattle or in Atlanta or Tampa or Arizona, who you've already beaten, 42-14. The Skins can catch the Packers. You know, that's the team. You got to root against the Packers while rooting for our team. You want to root against Philadelphia too, obviously, but that seems like a cause that doesn't have much of a shot with the way they are playing. The Packers have 3 of their final 5 games against Seattle, Detroit, and Minnesota on the road. And I did go through the playoff tie-breaking scenarios for wildcard teams. Washington, pretty much a slam dunk. If they got to, say, 11 and Green Bay lost another 3 games, and you had 2 11-6.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
I think once I started to talk about playoff scenarios, somehow we had a technical failure at the station. Apologize for that, but we are back, and Denton, I will continue with where I think I left off, and that is, look, it was a dominant offensive performance for Washington. They punted once in the game, and I think, you know, we all wanted the win yesterday to get to 8-5 and to snap a 3-game losing skid and keep a season that had so much promise for so much of it, you know, alive and put it back into the conversations we were having before losses to Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and Dallas. And they gave us that because it was an absolute near flawless performance on offense. They were outstanding defensively, too. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, you got used to the offense being unstoppable, and that's what it was. It's been the meal ticket for this team, and it looked awesome against a Tennessee defense that is pretty damn good. So going into the bye week, it's not just, you know, a 16-13, okay, thank God they won the game. It is a real good vibe going into the bye week. You know, they answered the bell. They faced adversity as an organization for this first time in season. The quarterback, for sure, faced it for the first time. And they needed that win, and they needed an overall performance that went with that win that also produced a real confident vibe heading into this very late bye week again for the third straight year. And I started to talk before realized that we had had a technical issue, is that I'm going to lay out the playoff scenario stuff right now. We are, you know, now in early December, and I'm a playoff scenario guy, as many of you know. And yes, it's a bit premature based on one really good game after three tough games, but they currently hold down the seventh and final seed in the NFC playoff picture. They are a game better in the loss column than 3-6-6 teams behind them. Those teams are all, by the way, chasing division titles as well. The way it looks now, if Washington can win two out of their final four to get to 10-7, they're totally safe. They're in. At 9-8, if they were to only win one of their final four games, it would get kind of dicey, no doubt, because you'd be involved in tiebreakers and maybe multiple team tiebreakers for the last spot. They have their schedule the rest of the way: New Orleans on the road after the bye week, Philly at home on the 22nd, Atlanta after that. And I mentioned, or want to mention, that I think the league will announce this week the games that will be moved from that Sunday, December 29th to Saturday, December 28th. And I think Atlanta, Washington is a good candidate for that. So we'll probably find that out this week. Then they close at Dallas on January 5th. Win two of those to get to 10, they're in. Win one, they're not out of it. There's a chance, but it'll come down to lots of tiebreakers more likely than not. Now, keep a couple of things in mind here. Washington is still barely alive for the NFC East. The Eagles have a three-game lead in the loss column, and they've already beaten Washington one time. And Washington lost a division game that maybe Philly won't lose. They lost to Dallas. So Washington likely needs to end up with a better record, even if they beat Philadelphia, to split their regular season games to have a shot here. Philly's got Pittsburgh and Washington, but then they've got Carolina, the Giants, and the Cowboys. So the division title is a long shot at this point. But here's the thing that isn't a long shot. Making the postseason, clearly, Washington is the favorite to make of the wild card chasers for that seven spot to secure it. But the other thing is, remember, if you're a seven seed, you go on the road to face the two seed in the first round. This is a bit premature, but we're going to do it anyway, because I want to share with you something that I figured out earlier this morning. And that is, as a seven seed, you go to either Philly, who would be the two, or Detroit, or the NFC North winner. Detroit's 11-1, the Vikings are 10-2, and the Packers are 9-3. So the Lions have not solidified or even come close to wrapping up the division yet. They have a huge game Thursday night at home against Green Bay. But there is a chance for Washington to move up in the wild card situation seeding-wise from a 7, which is where they are now, to the 6 spot. And the reason for that is Green Bay still has, at 9-3, Detroit, Seattle, and Minnesota all on the road the rest of the way. And if Washington could get into a tiebreaker with Green Bay, they would win it based on conference record the way things look right now. They more likely than not win a head-to-head tiebreaker with the Packers for seeding if they end up in a tie. So Green Bay's 9-3 right now. Washington's 8-5. They're two back in the loss column. Green Bay still has Detroit, Seattle, and Minnesota all on the road the rest of the way. So root for anybody that's playing Philly and anybody that's playing Green Bay the rest of the way. And obviously root for Washington to get two or three more wins. And who knows? They're going to be a short favorite, I would imagine, at New Orleans. They might be a short dog at home against Philly. And then probably a favorite at this point, maybe even a solid favorite over the slumping Falcons. You know who threw four interceptions, probably the worst game of his career yesterday. And they are in big trouble right now with Tampa surging, although they barely beat Carolina and needed a fumble by Chuba Hubbard in field goal range in overtime to beat the Panthers, who all of a sudden are playing well. They play Philadelphia next. Get sidetracked here for a moment. And then, you know, they'll be a favorite more likely than not at the end of the year, Dallas. Although Dallas has now won two in a row, and they feel like they're back into it. You know, the league is weird. We know that. It changes so quickly. But Washington right now in a really good spot. Two out of four gets in the seven seed for sure. Win three out of four. Win four out of four. You got a shot at that six seed where then you're playing at Seattle or at Arizona or in Los Angeles against the Rams or in Tampa or in Atlanta again, you know? So that's in play here for sure. All right, that's enough of that. Let's get to my game take. All right, we'll give you guys a shot to weigh in as well coming up at the top of the hour at 11 a.m. So if you want to start lining up on the phones, do it in about 15 minutes. I know some of you are on hold already, but 15, 20 minutes from now, time to start calling in. All right, the list of things that I liked, and there are plenty of them. Let's just start with high-level offensive execution. You know, this was a good defensive team coming in. We talked about how good they were defensively, you know, coming into on the show on Friday. The Titans were number one on third down defensively. They were second overall in the league in yards allowed, first overall in pass defense, ninth overall in rush defense, ninth overall in DVOA defensively. They were eighth in the league in EPA per play. They were the only team in the league that had three players in the top 15 in the categories of tackles for loss. Their problem all season long was offense and turnovers, primarily by the offense, and some poor special teams play. And we saw that yesterday on display as well. Not that Washington's was much better. We will get to that. But the offensive execution in this game was first rate. First, it started with, this was something I was screaming about the last couple of weeks. You know, especially last week when they were getting dominated up front. But quick game with Jaden, man, is really effective. They came out with quick game. They came out with a strong running game that set the tone early. I counted 11 quick throws or screens out of like the first 15 or 16 called pass plays in the first half. And just for comparison purposes, I think every quick game or screen was a completion, and the dropbacks were not successful in the first half. They resulted in a sack, two pressures, which led to two scrambles, and an incompletion. There was one positive play. It was a defensive hold on a shot to Deami Brown down near the goal line. The hold was actually away from the throw. But the tone setting was quick game and run game with the quarterback being involved, whether he kept it or not. The offensive line was exceptional, you know, and that comes after they were dominated last week. They dominated yesterday a Tennessee front that's been excellent. They were not very good last week against the Cowboys. Andrew Wiley was out. Cornelius Lucas was in the lineup. They were in two tight ends a bunch yesterday. A lot of 12 personnel with Bates and Ertz in the game at the same time, even Sinnott in the game as well. So their blocking and the run blocking especially was excellent. I thought the backs did a great job with vision, quickness, yards after contact. And Jaden's presence, again, as a possible runner on the majority of running plays was yesterday and has been all year an important factor in their success running the football. 267 yards on 45 attempts, 5.9 yards per carry, 463 total yards of offense. And that's, by the way, at the end, with not being super dynamic and trying to run the ball and kind of run the clock out. 9 of 14, as I mentioned, on third down. Not one team. I went back last week and looked at every game Tennessee's played this year. Not one team has had that kind of success offensively against Tennessee's defense this year. Nobody, not even Detroit, who scored 52 points against the Titans. But in that game, the Lions had a punt return for a touchdown, and the Titans turned it over four times in that game. Trust me, nobody all year did to Tennessee's defense what Washington did to it yesterday. Their head coach, Brian Callahan, said after the game, "We lost the line of scrimmage. If you want to beat a team with the quarterback as part of the run game, you have to win the line of scrimmage. They have a challenging scheme, but every time we looked up, it was third and one or third and two almost every time." That last part of his comment was so true. I told you I would give you the detail on third downs, so let's go to that. Because number two on the list of things I liked after just high-level offensive execution everywhere was just third downs on offense. It was my number one key to winning the game yesterday was to stay on the field. 9 of 14, 64.3% against the number one third down defense in the league. By the way, for comparison purposes, and these aren't exactly apples-to-apples situations because of the games and they were different, but Detroit was only 3 for 9 against Tennessee on third down. Buffalo was only 3 for 10 on third down against Tennessee. Washington, 9 for 14, 64.3%. And here were the breakdowns. Listen to this. They had four third and ones. They had five third and twos. They had three third and threes. 12 third downs of third and three or shorter. The others, by the way, were a little bit longer because of penalties and a sack, two sacks actually. But when you are effective in getting into that kind of down and distance consistently, honestly, I'm sure there are plenty of examples. I can't think of a game in which a team had 12 third and three or shorters. You know, typically you only have about 12 third down opportunities anyway. Sometimes less than that, sometimes more than that. But it also clearly means that your first and second down, you know, offense was working. But third down offense, number two on the list. Here are some specific names on offense that stood out. And the list is long here. All right, so bear with me. We'll start with Jaden because he was 25 of 30 for 206, three touchdowns, his first three touchdown game of his career. Back to a high completion percentage. Again, a ton of quick, easy throws, screens, which I think you got to credit Cliff Kingsbury for. The touchdown pass to Terry on third and goal at the three that made it 28-0, the play we came into the show with, was truly Mahomes, Stafford, Allen-like. You know, all the different arm angle throwers out there. That's what it was versus the blitz, an unblocked edge rusher, quick release, side-armed, on the money, really good contested catch, of course, always by Terry McLaurin. That's the kind of throw where I think when you see it, you're like, yeah, they got it right. He's the dude, you know? He recognized it pre-snap, knew where the pressure was coming from, knew it was unblocked, knew he had to create a throw that was super quick release, and he had to throw it with an angle, an arm angle, to get the ball around the rusher, and it was on the money. His other touchdown throw to Terry for the 21-0 lead was so good at manipulating the defense. You could see it with his eyes all the way while giving time for Terry, who lined up in the slot on that, to kind of clear the traffic into the end zone. Then he makes a perfect throw. By the way, it was kind of weird on that play that Bates was so close by. But really good throws from Jaden all day long. Loved the quick slant to Terry on third and one for 9 yards on their second drive. There was another quick one on that drive to Terry versus zone coverage. Terry sat it down for 11 yards. Such quick release and really good recognition of what Tennessee was doing. When it got to 28-13 in the third quarter, not that, I mean, I didn't feel like this was going to, you know, all of a sudden be a big lead blown. I mean, Tennessee, hey, they had a pick, you know, we'll talk about that. But, you know, Washington kind of needed to respond on that drive down 28-13, and they did. The slant to Terry, where Terry took a big shot, you know, was a really good throw. On that drive, there was a nice throw to Ertz, you know, lofted it in there kind of over zone coverage, over a first layer for 25 yards. Loved the play design on the touchdown pass to Ertz that made it 35-13 to end that drive. Finally, in the early portion of the fourth quarter, it was a fake zone read on third and two inside the 10. And then it's really used as like play action. And you see him after he fakes the zone read and sucks the defense up. Then he backs up and he lofts a beautiful throw to Ertz for the touchdown. Just a lot of really good plays overall in the pass game. There were a few he'd like to have back. The interception was a high ball. More on him than Ertz, in my opinion. There have been too many drop passes in recent games, you know, on Jaden, but that one was high. Look, his very first throw of the game to Terry in the quick game was a bit high. You know, we talked about some of those that hit the dirt against Philly in the Thursday night game. I actually think his misses tend to be higher overall. But anyway, on the drive in the first half that ended with the first of two missed Zane Gonzalez field goals, they ran a quick look on a play action to Zacchaeus in the flat after they had faked Zacchaeus in the backfield. It's one of those plays where you get the action in the backfield, you get the, you know, the quick fake handoff, and then you're looking at Zacchaeus in the flat. It sucks the defense up, and you throw behind the sucked-up defense into that honey hole. It's not exactly the honey hole against cover two that, you know, Cooley's talked about and others have talked about all these years, but there's that hole behind the defense that's coming up to stop the quick throw to Zacchaeus. And Jaden, he completes the ball to Noah Brown, but it's a bad throw. He leads him to the sideline, and it's an 11-yard play. If he leads him inside, it's probably a touchdown. That was the play where afterwards Jaden's pointing to himself, smiling, but saying, my bad, you know, missed, not a good throw. He'd love to have that one back. That would have made it 35-0. His first sack actually came a few plays after that. I thought that that sack, that there was an escape route to the left, but he actually ran into the pressure to the right, and that set up one of the first, you know, and only few third and longs on the day, and that preceded the first missed field goal. The other sack, by the way, was the one before the second missed field goal by Gonzalez in the fourth quarter. It was third and two at the Tennessee 30. They got confused up front with a stunt, and there was an immediate pressure on Jaden, and he's trying to avoid losing field goal range because he's about to get sacked for about an 8 or 9 yard loss back to about the 40-41 yard line. And I think, you know, he pushes the ball forward before being taken to the ground. I think it actually could have been called an incomplete pass. McNichols was right there. I think it was McNichols. May have been Rodriguez. Allegretti jumps on the ball, and they did call it a fumble. You know, so he minimized the 9 yard loss, but did it with kind of a high risk play up 35-13. I'm not saying that he'd want that back necessarily. It wasn't his fault. There was an immediate pressure. They just lost the edge rusher on a stunt. He had no real shot on the play. Yeah, I mean, other than those few plays, running-wise, 9 for 34. I think there was a solid run called back by a penalty, but he was solid as a scrambler and as a zone read runner. For Jaden, it was overall an A performance for the quarterback. You know, another one. I mean, that's probably out of the 13 games he's played, that's 8 or 9 A or, you know, A-plus performances. You know, back as a solid front runner for Offensive Rookie of the Year, although Bo Nix plays tonight for Denver against Cleveland. Other specific performances that stood out. Obviously, Terry McLaurin, 8 catches, 73 yards, 2 touchdowns. For him, he now has the most touchdowns in a season in his career. You know, he was tied with the 7 that he had his rookie year going into yesterday. 2 more puts him at 9 this year. He's also, you know, clearly on pace for more likely than not his highest yardage season of the year. Receptions wise, he's 26 short of what he had in 2020 with 4 games left. They targeted him early. That was nice to see in quick game. You can do that with Terry, especially if they're playing off, you know, and gets the quarterback into rhythm, gets Terry some touches. They lined him up, you know, in different spots, not exclusively on one side. The touchdown catch was out of the slot. I don't know what the final breakdown of where he lined up is. We can look at that later. But Terry, man, is a contested catch guy. There aren't that many better than him. He's so good. You know, he's got a lot of opportunities on contested catches. What does that speak to? That speaks to a couple of things. Number one, it speaks to he's getting the toughest assignment because they don't have anybody on the team right now that's close to what he can do to a defense. So you're drawing the best coverage. You're drawing, you know, sometimes bracketed or even double coverage. He's also not the greatest separator in the game. You know, he just isn't. But does it matter if he's going to catch everything that's, you know, anywhere near being catchable? Because that's what he does. 8 catches, 73 yards on the day. By the way, other receivers, I was glad to see Luke McCaffrey have a couple of catches, that 4th down catch. I think De'Ami Brown, they are now working more to De'Ami Brown. He's been the guy in the reverse game. He's been the guy at times, along with Zacchaeus, but more so De'Ami in some of the jet sweep stuff. And they throw more bubbles to De'Ami maybe than anybody else. He's got a burst. He's got speed. And you can see that they look at De'Ami Brown maybe a little bit differently now than they did earlier in the season. That's good to see. You know, that not every draft choice from the last regime is needing resuscitation. Noah Brown got injured in the game. He's a big-time target for Terry, for Jaden. He loves him. You know, Ertz was solid. I thought all 3 running backs were really good. They are so much better with Brian Robinson Jr. healthy. He is just super good with his vision. He is explosive in the hole. He also is yards after contact. I thought McNichols ran well. But let's face it, I mean, every single time Chris Rodriguez gets an opportunity, it seems like, he produces. I know it's the end of the game, it's the 4th quarter, etc., but they are lined up trying to stop the run. 13 for 94 and a touchdown for number 36. I think Rodriguez has been since he arrived. He's a good runner. You know, there are other reasons that they have released him and signed him back and released him and signed him back. But, you know, in terms of what he's capable of doing on a football field, solid. Again, the 3 running backs combined for 229. I really like McNichols and what he's done as a runner. I think he's got terrific vision as well. So all 3 running backs on the list of things that I liked. I mentioned De'Ami Brown. Defensively, it starts with Luvu, man. This guy is just an absolute menace. You know, Frankie Louvu, you get him next year in year two of this system, you add a little bit more to the defensive side of the ball. Frankie Louvu is a Pro Bowl player. He has incredible anticipation ability. He senses everything. How many batted balls has he had in the last three games? I think it's five in total. He's their best. We can say what we want about Fowler Jr. and, you know, at times a couple of the other guys. He's their best pass rusher. He is their most explosive pass rusher. He's their biggest hitter. I love Frankie Louvu. Look, I'm going to put Sanristil on the list of things that I liked. I know that he gave up in coverage the touchdown pass at the end of the first half, but he also forced a fumble. He was in coverage a couple times. I think it was it him or Noah I that broke up the two-point conversion? I'm actually forgetting now.
That was Noah I.
That was Igbinoghene. Okay. I just like everything I see with Sanristil. Look, corners are going to get beat occasionally. And by the way, their receiver, Westbrook Akine, is good. He's been very good now for, you know, certainly three seasons, Denton. Every bit of three seasons, two and a half seasons. And, you know, Sanristil takes on those challenges, you know, in man coverage and has played them pretty well for a lot of the last three, four, five games. Loved the play that Walker made on special teams. Not only did he knock that ball out, he recovered it. Who else stood out? Not Walker. I'm sorry. It was Tyler Owens. Tyler Owens, number 40, knocked it out, and Walker recovered it. Yeah. I mean, really excellent job across the board on offense and defense. Really pleased with everything. And again, to me, the vibe going into this break, it could have been disastrous with a loss. It could have been deep breath, they won, but dot, dot, dot. But it was the best case scenario. It was a win, and it was impressive on both sides of the ball. Oh, also on the list of things that I liked. Let's face it, Tennessee had something to do with this. I think Washington forced most of it. They're 3-9 for a reason. They turned the ball over too much. They had two turnovers, short fields that Washington capitalized with touchdowns. By the way, Washington 5-for-7 in the red zone, also on the list of things that I liked. Tennessee had 12 penalties overall, but had in the first half, hold on, where is it? In the first half, they had 11 penalties for 85 yards. They are a self-destructive unit. That's the bottom line. They've got a quarterback that is wildly inaccurate. Not a good decision maker. He does have a big arm. You got to give Levis, you know, credit. He's got a big arm, and he actually, when he is on target, he looks the part. But 75 to 80% of the time, he's bungling around, not knowing what he's seeing, not knowing what he's doing, and he's just not very good at this point. I think one of the keys to in jumping on Tennessee early the way they did, with a touchdown to start the game, with a second touchdown, with two turnovers that led to touchdowns, is Tennessee couldn't run the football because there wasn't a lot of it. But it was their second drive, in fact, their second drive of the game, they ran it for a first down with Pollard on like two straight runs. It was like two or three straight runs. Maybe that wasn't the drive. May have been their third. One of their drives, Pollard had like 11 yards and three runs, 12 yards and three runs. And then they got away from it. And they got behind, so they couldn't run the football. But Pollard was 8-for-35 for 4.4 yards. It's really important, you know, to be productive offensively and take advantage of the opportunities that the other team gives you, because then you make a team like Tennessee one-dimensional, and they're not good if that one dimension is throwing the football. They're not. Really, really good day offensively and defensively. However, there is a concern, and we will get to that when we come back and go through the list of things that I didn't like from the game. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. All right, list of things that I did not like. This is easy, right? It starts with the kicker. They've had a major kicker issue in their loss to the Cowboys. Fortunately, two missed field goals did not hurt them today. And to be fair, the field goals were 46 and 52 yards out. But still, beautiful day, no wind. In this league, pretty much anything inside 50 now is pretty much a given. I mean, we've seen a lot of the longer field goals be given, although it does seem like, doesn't it, Denton, that there have been so many missed field goals in the NFL over the last, like, month of the season. But what do you do? Well, you got to be looking. You have to be looking during this bye week. Got to be bringing in guys. You know, the way he nailed his extra points, you know, looked comfortable. He had not missed a kick coming in to this game. But he missed two. They didn't matter at all in a 42-19 route. He was 6-for-6 on his extra points. But you can't be missing as you play these games down the stretch trying to solidify your playoff position. You can't be missing two field goals. You can't go for 0-for-2. You know, it's one thing to be 0-for-2 on a 54-yarder and a 59-yarder. You know, those were within his range. So that's number one on the list of things that were problematic from yesterday. I also think overall, special teams had one of their poorer days. You know, there were two big penalties on special teams. There were Cosme on got a 15-yarder on the PAT. Mike Davis had a 15-yarder for blocking a player and not letting him back in bounds against one of the worst punt return punt coverage units in the league. Washington averaged 6 yards per punt return in the game yesterday on kickoff returns without Eckler. McNichols only averaged 22.5 yards per return on 4 returns. They had, you know, obviously the forced fumble by Tyler Owens on the kickoff return. That was a good play. No doubt. And they didn't really have a shot on punt returns because Washington only punted once in the game. But those would be the two negatives from the game more than any other. I didn't like what they did at the end of the first half. They've done this before. I think if you are going to try and score, then try and score. Because they took over after the first touchdown, the touchdown pass, Westbrook-Ikhine over Sanristil. They took over after the kick went through the end zone from their own 30-yard line with 3 timeouts left. That is plenty of time, even though you're getting the ball to start the second half, to go get points. And they dropped Jaden back twice. Found McCaffrey for 6 yards, called the timeout, banged a timeout with 15 seconds left. So now you're like, well, we're trying to score here, you know? And then on the next pass, it was short to Terry, and the play ended with 11 seconds to go, and the ball was out at the 40-yard line. Why not another timeout? And then you take a shot down the middle of the field for your third timeout, and maybe you put Gonzalez in there to try a long field goal. The point here is, if you're gonna, if you make the decision, yeah, we're gonna try to do it. Now, you can make the decision to try to do it, and you have an unsuccessful play on first down, and then you let the clock run out. Understood, with 23 seconds left. But if you've got a successful play on first down where you call timeout, and then a not, you know, big chunk play, it was a 4-yard play on second down, you're at the 40-yard line. That is one completion away from field goal range, potentially. Maybe they felt like on that second down play, they needed a lot more on that play to go for it. They've done it a few times, though. Like, to me, it's like, why even run the plays if you're ultimately going to bail on an opportunity, you know, that you created with your first two plays? Wasn't a great opportunity, understood. But this is like the third time at the end of the half we've seen some of this. Like, ooh, let's get it out near midfield, and then let's bail. We've seen a couple of those where they decided not to throw the Hail Mary at the end of the first half. Now, that's different because you put the quarterback in a vulnerable position sometimes on Hail Mary plays. You know, I look, it was 28-7, and I would have been fine had they taken a knee with 23 seconds to go, you know, and said, let's get to the break, because Tennessee didn't have, I think they may have had one timeout left, maybe one, so they couldn't have gotten the ball back. I wouldn't have had a problem at that point getting the ball to start the second half. Why even risk it? You're up 28-7. Don't give them another opportunity with a bad play. But once you decided you were going to try to go get it, well, then try to go get it. Yeah, that would pretty much be it from the list of things that I didn't like. There were a few coverage, you know, issues here and there in the second half, but they're kind of hard to identify by person. Look, here's one thing that is true about the game yesterday, okay? When a game gets sideways like that quickly, it's really hard to then evaluate really the opponent who's down 28-0 because they're not doing what the game plan was designed to do anymore. They're now in, we have to throw the football, we got to get chunk plays, we got to score touchdowns, etc. And even when they got to 28-13, you know, it still didn't feel that way. So they got away from any semblance of trying to run the football. Will Levis had some good throws, had some good completions, had two good touchdown throws to Westbrook Ikhine. And the other thing you have to say is he had four or five balls just flat out dropped in the game. We're used to that. We've had a bunch of those ourselves the last 3 weeks, but there were four or five dropped passes by Tennessee receivers. So, yeah, I've got a few other things that I just want to mention as other observations, but you can start lining it up on lines right now at 301-230-0980. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the team980.com.